Taste of Ireland with Visit Belfast. It's time to uncover Belfast, a city alive with arts, music, festivals and world-class attractions. Visit Belfast.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. And my special guest this evening is Paul Cunningham. Paul, of course, you're a bit of a legend around here, a very famous chef and a big star from the British menu as well on television. I met you the other night, Paul, at an amazing event that you created, a secret dining experience, which was held up here in Killeavy Castle in County Down, and it was really fantastic. Can I just ask you, Paul, to bring us back, I suppose, a little bit, and just tell us, you started cooking at a very early age, you were 12.
Yeah, so I started cooking professionally when I was 12. Started dishes when I was 11, which is probably illegal, but I just wanted a job. And I loved the buzz, and I was like, I want a wee piece of that there. And I got a big piece, and I continue to get big pieces. And be honest, I love it more today than I ever have.
The other night, I would have to say that was one of the best experiences I've ever had. It was almost like an adventure in food, and it was just so many levels and textures and flavours. I was so delighted when you said you'd come on and chat to us tonight, because I wanted to share you with all the wonderful listeners here. But that was something else, Paul, completely. I mean, I was going to ask you, where did you get your inspiration? Some of those dishes, I mean, we can go through them actually a little bit. Some of those dishes that you created were sublime. And I mean, you know, the one I was chatting to you about earlier, the parsnip one, for example, that was just, I never had anything like it.
Well, I get my inspiration from my foraging and from the local produce, and like listening to the producer's stories as well. To be honest, I get a lot of inspiration that way. I'm always pushing myself to try and get better. I'm never ever content to what level I'm at. I'm always sort of looking at 3 steps ahead. So I don't think I'll ever be content to where I am, you know. I just say it's sort of my wee mission to push the food in our local area.
And the passion that you got, you talk about foraging there, you would be known, you're like the foraging king of Ireland, really, aren't you? Because you got that from your grandfather, and your father was handed down generation to generation.
Yeah, so like I come from a really, really big family. My dad had nine brothers and sisters. So you imagine how many cousins I have. But my granda seemed to hone in on me. Now, whether I showed the spark or I knew I was going to be a chef in the long run, I don't know. But he taught me the way of the land and taught me how to respect the land. Amazing, and things I still hold now. Just them things he enlisted in me, like from no age. Like he had some skill, like he used to be able to catch a salmon out of the water with a snare. And he'd stand waiting, his brother stand behind him, and he'd flick it out and he would catch it. Or they would send us out when they were young to hunt rabbits with a torch and a tub of salt. And you wonder what the salt's for. Like, so he said, shine the torch in their eyes and send one of us around the back to put salt in his tail. But sure, the rabbit ran away every time. He was sitting in the house having a few bushmills. And that was his version of babysitting, you know.
Very clever.
Great crack.
Tire you out.
Yeah, great crack. Like, we never caught one rabbit, like, you know.
That's a good one for people to note. So when you started off, you were in Dundrum here, was it, of course, the local area near Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And you went and then you kind of cut your teeth on different restaurants here locally, did you?
Yeah. I've cooked in a lot of restaurants here locally. My auntie was a chef as well. And she told me, whenever you're young, switch job every 6 months if you're not learning. And that's how you build your skill quicker. And she was very, very right. I've also been offered jobs by some of the biggest chefs in the UK. But every time I've said no, and I was like, why? You're being offered a job in a 2-star restaurant. But I'm like, what's the point in me going over there for them to ship over our good produce for me to cook with? That, to me, doesn't make sense. And I've always believed that there's big things happening in this local area. And Friday night was an example of that. And I want to be at the forefront.
Yeah, what was incredible, I think, about what was really exceptional as well about the other night was all of the local people that had supplied the ingredients were also there, from Shortcross Gin, Cologne Distillery with Brendan, the whiskies, and the poutine, which you mentioned, is legal up here, by the way, and very good. You had Neary Nog's chocolate, you had, you know, but just, I mean, I don't know them, but there was about 15, you'd know more than me now.
15, Castle Screen Farm, there's
amazing. But it was, and these people were all there, and of course it was amazing the way that you were able to, I suppose, you created all these dishes, and again, I think there was supposed to be 9, it ended up at 11, you were on a mission.
Yeah, I couldn't slim it down. I wrote half a 5-block of dishes for that one experience, and I just couldn't slim it down. To be honest, it was meant to be 8 courses, and it ended up being 11, but in a way, all the producers were there, and then, sort of in a way, it was my little thank you to them. Because if you look at me as a painter, they're supplying the paint. And without them supplying the paint, I can't do my job. You know, and good food starts with good produce. You know, so I only use the best produce. So it's a little thank you to them, really.
Yeah. And I mean, what you've created here is incredible. You went on then, of course, your new concept, which is your company now, The Mourne Larder, mm-hmm. Which is a lovely name. And it kind of gives you the idea of exactly what you're doing there. I suppose mm-hmm. like a pantry or something,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
And when you decided that you didn't want to be in sort of conventional restaurant, chef, restaurant mm-hmm. thing anymore, that was obviously a big step for you to make, was it? A risky step for people would think.
It was a massive step. Like I was owner of a very, very, very successful restaurant. But lockdown just made us all think a wee bit more. So at that stage, I was sitting at about 90-92% TAWAR, and I believed I could push a bit further. So I decided to set up Mourne Larder, where now I'm 100% TAWAR, and I only use ingredients within 20 miles. So the idea is I only cook with larder than Mourne's provides.
Amazing. Now, I suppose for people, again, we could go in a little bit more. So terroir, I would have associated that with wines, usually, because you know the way wines win best terroir and best. Mm-hmm. So you're using it in terms of food there.
Yeah. So it's my belief that our ecosystem is amazing and our food is the best about. I really do believe that the Mourne area is one of the richest lands in Ireland. You know, if you take, for instance, where I live, 5 minutes I could be in the forest or 5 minutes I could be on the beach. And the produce is amazing. It's everywhere, you know. So I only use ingredients within 20 miles and sort of explain the extent of that. If I can't get it here, I make it myself. So fish sauce I can't get here. So I keep all my fish cuts and I ferment that 6 to 8 months to make my own garnium, make my own fish sauce. Instead of using coffee, I would use dandelion root. Instead of using soya sauce, I make my own soya sauce out of mushrooms. But it goes on and on and on. Like, you should see the fridges I have out the back of the house with just all my preserves. I make my own spices. So instead of using cinnamon and clove, I would use wood haven root. You know, it goes very, very deeply.
Amazing. And I mean, the menu the other night was almost it was almost medieval in a way, because the dish that I really, one of the ones that blew me away was the parsnip and mead dish. You could just mead, of course, associated with, I hadn't had seen that before, with the monks of yore, I suppose. Where did you get your idea for that, and how did you get the inspiration for that dish, which was, by the way, for people to know, it was a dessert.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I've brewed my own mead for years. I make my own wines and make my own vinegars as well. So I have my own mother of make mead vinegar as well. So I get my honey off my next door neighbour, who has all his hives out in Merlin Nature Reserve. And then just trying to take that natural sweetness of parsnips and showing a vegetable in a different light. Why can't the parsnip be nice and sweet? And it's a lot healthier. So I just came together with the mead and the parsnip and then the oat as well. It was nice.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely amazing. Really, really something else. As I said, textures that I'd never had before. And the foraging is very interesting because it's real. I mean, some people think, oh, you know, do a bit of foraging, pick a few mushrooms. I mean, your level of it, I mean, you could probably survive in the wilderness probably for about a year because you would know exactly what to eat.
Yeah, quite happily. Like, you know, take it for instance, like most chefs would just pick wild garlic leaves, right? But I would use a leaf and then use the flour. I use the flour fresh, but I also preserve the flour in a 4% brine. And then you go on the seeds. So the seeds, I would ferment the seeds. I would pickle the seeds. And I would also turn seeds into capers. But then in autumn time, I also use the root as well. So I dig up and use the root. So it just shows you that extent of what way I'm using it. And taking sap out of trees, so birch sap, pine sap. It goes very, very deep. You know?
But it's amazing. I mean, I would have imagined that you'd have to go to like kind of, you know, a school or college to learn all about this. No, I mean, it's amazing that this is like sort of all instinctive in you and in the handed down. It's quite phenomenal, really.
I've been very lucky. I've been very lucky childhood growing up. You know, my grandfather, he had his own garden centre. He taught me about sustainability. My granny was also a great baker, although I couldn't get any recipes because it was a handful of this and a handful of that, and my hands are different sizes, you know. But she was great, and she was always whistling in the kitchen, whizzing something up, you know, and I still have fond memories and can picture it in my head, as clear as day.
That's something that's interesting. I mean, just you reminded me of even my own granny down in Cork. She was a bit of an expert on mushrooms, and she, you know, when I'd be going walking the greyhounds with her, Ellen Desmond, she'd tell me, don't touch that, because they were obviously toadstools, you know, or you'd end up like in hospital. But it's amazing, isn't it? That seems to have kind of almost disappeared. It's so lovely to see it coming back. And you were telling me your kids are all involved in foraging and quite expert at very young ages.
Yeah. So my oldest daughter, Farah, she named every seaweed on the beach. you know. But for me, it's it's all about local food. You know, it's funny. Like my brother said to me about a year ago, he goes, "I take a wee spoonful of local honey every day just to keep the body right." And I sort of cheekily said back to him, "Well, why don't you just eat local food, mate?" Yeah, you know, to me that seems normal. It seems very grounded to me to do that. That, you know. Yeah. Isn't there alien to eat foreign food, you know?
It's very interesting because, in fact, my grandfather, who was born in Hollywood County Down, he used to take a spoon of honey every day as well. So was it something to do with the area up here?
Yeah, people think...
It's a secret.
Because it's local honey, it's better for you. And that's very true. But if you're eating local food, it's better for you. Like, I'm very interested in the health benefits for his food as well. Like, there's no pesticides. It's natural to your local area. Like, there's seaweed, for instance. It can help shrink tumours in the body. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Baby hawthorn leaves are actually a superfood. They can convert bad cholesterol into good cholesterol. They change it, like, you know.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, that really is quite amazing. I mean, for people, you know, we can give out the details later. Maybe people can get more information about this. But the seaweed, of course, kelp, you're quite an expert on that as well. I mean, that seems to be, like, amazing superfood, isn't it? And it's there on our doorstep in the sea in front of us, these beautiful kelp fields.
There's loads, like, seaweed is a superfood. Like, it's so many health benefits, but then it's got thickening agents, so you can use it for vegans. Also, like, I haven't came across type of seaweed that you can't eat yet. Just some aren't that nice to eat. A lot I would dry out and then add them to stocks to give me more of an umami flavour. I also, the lamb the other night, I dry aged that in kelp for 4 days. And the benefits that are amazing, you know. It seasons it for you, you don't have to use any salt. Also, sugar kelp is quite good. We would dry it out in the house and give it to the girls as crisps. It's like a nice, sweet, sweet, nutritious crisp. It's much better than anything you're going to get in the shop.
Yeah, amazing. You know? I mean, that is really... I mean, that's, again, stuff I'd never heard about before. That's that's really, really incredible. And so, as you said, like, so healthy and nutritious for kids. I mean, there's... I think, you know, you could... There's a big... There's a major... You could make a fortune with all that stuff. Like, it's really, really interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Paul, we're going to talk a little bit after your first choice of music now about your experience on the Great British Menu, I guess, which would be really, really good. What have you chosen for us for your first choice of music this evening?
Yeah, so sticking with my ethos, I want to keep it all local as well. So the first one's a very good friend of mine. It's The Answer, and the tune's called Be What You Want.
A taste of Ireland with Visit Belfast. It's time to uncover Belfast, a city alive with arts, music, festivals and world-class attractions. Visit Belfast.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. That was a really interesting piece of music. Paul, Be What You Want, very nice. Your experience on the Great British Menu, right? You must tell us the truth here now, right? No, I want all the secrets. You know, that was an amazing experience for you, I think. And it got you to international or sort of national stardom, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
Can you go into any restaurant now? Everyone's asking you for your autograph.
Yeah,
like.
Everyone's looking at you, you know. You never have to go into disguise. Yeah, it was amazing. You know, like, I watched that programme from it started and always wondered, will I ever be good enough to be on that? And then you get the phone call one day and it goes from there. You know, what an amazing thing to do for your region. And the contacts you get through that as well. Like, Tom Akins was my first year. Like, I've looked up that guy from no age. And then my second year, Daniel Clifford. Again, another giant in the industry. I'm very, very good. And I became friends with both of them since then, which is good. Like, you know, it's good for me.
How much time did it take? Or, you know, was it obviously, it was a big commitment, was it?
Yeah, it's a pretty tight timeline. So the first time they phoned me, within 2 days, I had a cameraman in my kitchen, checking to see where I was camera ready or whatever. A week after that, you find out that you're down to the last five and you get your brief. You have to have your menu in. You get the brief at 12 o'clock on a Friday night, and your menu has to be in by 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks after that, all recipes have been. And then you can be in that kitchen from the week after that up to 8 weeks after that.
The goal of the programme is that the winner is sort of somebody who creates a kind of, would it be a menu that's sort of, I'm not saying mass appeal, but, you know, I'm not sure myself what the actual, what was the goal or what was to win the competition?
Yep.
What did you have to do? But I think it was interesting, I suppose, the whole process for you, was it?
Yeah, it was class. Now, the first year was a wee bit difficult because it was children's literature. And the only book I really read was George's Morris Medicine. I wrote that, also, that was a wee bit difficult. But once you research and you start getting into it, it becomes really, really fun. And you push yourself, you do become better, a better chef, definitely. Now, the first year was difficult for me because I felt as if I had something to prove. Because I still see me as wee Paul from Dundrum, you know, so like my starter at 34 elements, you know.
Wow. Was daunting, right? I mean, like how, you know, how would you even pull that together? I struggle with meat and two veg, right? How would you pull 34 ingredients together? I mean, where would you even get the idea for that?
So I done like a Mad Hatter's tea party. And there's so many different wee elements to it. Like even after all the free chefs are like, Paul, I don't know how you pulled that off. And I was like,
what was your kind of idea behind that 34 ingredients and what you were creating there?
So again, it was always sticking with my style. Like, and then with Born Orders when you started, but I've always been well rooted here. So again, it was 20 miles. So I had like a wee Ballylisk tartlet with bacon jam and fresh clover. I had a crab, brown crab, because brown crab isn't used that much. I like to be more sustainable. Sweet corn and meadow sweet muffin. I had a chicken liver parfait, like in the wee spring roll. I made a woodland tea, because Mad Hatter had his tea in the woods, so I made a woodland flavoured tea. There's loads of stuff. It's hard to remember now.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, even just that there, it's even your, if we're on radio, visually you can create in your mind, you can see this kind of, you know, unfold. Incredible stuff. And like, I mean, again, but again, a very healthy, nutritious theme kind of running through it all.
Yeah, exactly. Like my fish course in the first year was all about my belief of the power of the land to heal the body.
Yeah.
So I've done magical medicines where the kids go and get medicine for their mum. So I create a seafood dish. So a lot.
Bottle of kilo and gin.
So I create a seafood dish, use a lot of seaweeds and things that are healthy for the body. It was good.
Brilliant. And I mean, the way things are now, I mean, COVID, right, you were saying there earlier, of course, it changed a lot of perceptions in terms of even companies that were, you know, running big offices have decided now staff are still working at home and may work from home for the rest of their lives, you know, the way things have changed. For you, the challenges of that and, you know, I suppose in a way, maybe not as much as others because you were quite local, weren't you?
Yeah. Very, very local. I found, to be really honest, I found COVID very hard the first 2 weeks. I don't think I spoke to my wife for 2 weeks. I'm not afraid to say that. I've been working since I was 12. I've had 5 weeks off since I started cooking. So you can imagine if everything just stops. It was a complete culture shock to me, you know. Even whenever I was in Great British Menu, the second year I was still struggling with it, and Daniel Clifford said to me, but that's okay, you have to be honest about it, you know. I think because when I wasn't foraging as much for the restaurant, so I wasn't out in the wild, you know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, but I think you're great to say that because I think everybody struggled. I mean, you know, a lot of my stuff was travel related, and I mean, everything just came to a halt, and you were like, holy God, what's going on here? I mean, and I think obviously there'll be a lot of repercussions, and, you know, what's interesting is, I mean, I was reading as well recently about your belief that, you know, the foods that you work with are very good for mind and body.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Especially the foraging, getting out there and just reconnecting with nature and just leave your phone at home for a while. Like, you know, it's that simple, you know. I was sort of hoping with COVID, and I don't know if it's happened or not, that everything would go back a couple of decades, back to going to your local butcher.
Yeah.
Back to using your local bread man. Say no to Tesco's and all them boys. They're just strangling our producers. You know, I was hoping that it would go that way. Now, it's sort of shifted. They can see people support more local, but I think they need to do more. They need to go and get to know the local butcher.
Yeah, it's interesting, I suppose, as well, Paul, with the way all the, you know, we've seen all the desperate thing with plastics and, you know, the way the world is being polluted and all the animals and stuff. It's really scary. It would be lovely to kind of to have that all creatures great and small. Where wouldn't it, like the Harriets in the glass bottles and, you know, when the milk was delivered to the door. And
exactly.
But I think your menu the other night and actually the experience was a bit redolent of that for me, in that because it was tight, a little bit medieval, I suppose. Yeah. You served the first few dishes on a beautiful, it was lovely wood, like kind of bark, and it was just everything was sensory. So amazing amount of thought and effort going into that. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of the menu the other night, just to give people a little idea, and people who probably would love to experience this, right? And I would say to anybody, you know, you have to try this once in your life anyway. How did you put that all together?
I'm just really well organized. I'm a list guy, you know. Yeah. Really well organized. It's not hard when you love it, and it's that simple. Like my dad said to me, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life, and he was very right. Like, it's just being well organized, you know. So some of my marinades and all was started a week before, and then by the time I salt them and then slow cook them cuts. So it's just being organised.
And how do you find now with the more larder idea, do you feel a little bit liberated, and do you feel now that you're on a path to something? Because there was just amazing passion and energy and creativity the other night, and to be brought to a setting like that, I suppose, in a beautiful castle in the garden, and you know, as I said, with the music and everything was sort of just, everything seemed to work really well. I mean, that must be a great source of, you know, for you, like, of encouragement. And you must think that, because this is something really, I think this is something huge that people will just really, this is going to take off. It reminded me actually a bit Nordic, a bit Scandinavian as well.
A lot of my style of cooking would be quite Scandi. I don't believe in the, well, I'm very classically French trained, but I don't believe in butter, cream, fat. I think that just masks a lot of flavour. Where I like more of the Nordic style, where it's more about the product and making that shine out and making it the real star. For more Northern, the secret dining, we're going to get warmed up. You know, it's going to get way, way better. And my wee head's bubbling all the time. I sort of see myself as a wee man on a mission. And my mission is to utilise and promote local produce. And I'm going to do it through these tasting menus. And that's why I've set that up. Because I'm getting people coming saying, Paul, I didn't think I liked lamb. And they're loving the lamb. And it's lamb tartare, you know what I mean? Like, it's raw lamb.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I would have been one of those as well. I would have, you know, traditional leg of lamb, you know, with your Easter sort of. But that was really, I mean, again, the flavour. And you wouldn't expect that. Sometimes people would be like, oh my God, you know, raw, I couldn't eat. But I don't think I even knew, to be honest with you, because it was such a beautiful little portion and a beautiful little cabbage leaf. It was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wrapped the lamb in kelp for 4 days to dry age it. That's a really, really old Irish method. So I'm trying to bring old Irish methods back, but using my skill to take it to the next level, really, you know. But it's even like fish, like we're an island surrounded by water, and the amount of people here don't eat fish is ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you go really back to really ancient Irish food and what they would eat, it was fish, it was seagull eggs, you know, they would have called dairy white meat to poor people, you know. So it's just trying to bring that back. And you wonder why people don't like scallops or don't like halibut. It's probably because it's been poorly handled or poorly cooked, you know?
Yeah, that's incredible. The fish actually, the other night, the fish was amazing. I mean, it was really, really stunning. I mean, and that when you get a proper piece of fish cooked like that, almost to perfection, I mean, it would make you think, God, why don't I eat more of this, you know? Mm-hmm. I suppose as well, it's about, like you were saying there, Paul, it's very much about availability, because, I mean, you know, going to supermarkets now, you're going to places, and you really, you see there's certain, it seems to be all smoked coolie, and, you know, like, I don't know, there doesn't seem to be so much variety. Anyway, am I wrong? I don't know.
No, you're right, but they're just hitting the mass market. Mm. You know, that's why you want to check out your fishmonger, call down your local harbour and get to know the fishermen. One, you're going to get fresher, and two, you're probably going to get cheaper, and three, you're probably going to build up good relationships so you can get things the way you want them. You know, it's simple, you know.
And when you decided to do the extra two courses the other night, was that just were you bored?
No, I couldn't slow down. Like, honestly, I had a half file block of pages of dishes and dishes and dishes, and I couldn't slim it down. I couldn't take myself to slim it down.
Yeah, the chocolate, again, you mentioned a company there, I think Neary Nogs, that chocolate was Nicaragua, I remember, was on the menu, word Nicaragua. It was amazing. That's what, where the chocolate, was that where the pods came from? Or
yeah. It's phenomenal chocolate, and what Neary Nogs do is amazing. Like, I thought I knew a bit about chocolate, not until I met them. Now I know a good bit more. They put a lot of effort into where they source their chocolate beans. I didn't realise that the cocoa trade was so corrupt, like ridiculously bad. I never knew that until I met them. It was a real eye-opener for me. So essentially what I was doing there was a Visit Morne version of chocolate, orange and coffee. So I replaced the orange with sea buckthorn, the forage off the beach, and I replaced the coffee with Clowen's Gloria.
Wow. I mean, and for anybody who, you know, I'll put some pictures up on the podcast so you can give people a look, because I took lots of pictures, you know, and that was one night when you're allowed to take lots of pictures. But it was fabulous. I mean, who would have thought this amazing chocolate company in the middle of the Mornes, you know, savour the Mornes. It was just fantastic. Yeah. Paul, what have you picked for your second piece of music this evening?
Yeah, so the second piece is a very good friend of mine, multi-award winning singer-songwriter who played a lot of my secret dinings. It's Donal Scullion, and it's My Little Thank You.
A taste of Ireland with Visit Belfast. It's time to uncover Belfast, a city alive with arts, music, festivals and world-class attractions. Visit Belfast.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax. Sunshine.
106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. My very special guest this evening, Paul Cunningham. I'm sure everyone is absolutely starving, Paul, listening to us talking here this evening. The company Savour the Mourns and Visit the Mourns, they've done amazing stuff, haven't they, in bringing everything together. And I think the way they're encouraging people here, it really is, and I know I'm going on about it now, but there is a certain magic about this part of Northern Ireland, isn't there?
Well, they all say there's something in the water, and yeah, there most certainly is something in the water. There's so many good things happening here, you know, and it's so good to meet the producers of the same sort of ideas I have, where they're trying to keep it natural. You know, like our Whitewater Brewery, there's only 3 ingredients in our beer, nothing else.
Yeah.
And it is phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal. Yeah. I befriended myself with them very well, for obvious reasons. You know, like their Belfast Black is amazing. Mm. You know, I would have been a Guinness man, but the Belfast Black is, I think it's far better.
It's incredible, isn't it? And even the I would have been traveling, I'm lucky enough to travel around the Czech Republic, and I would have been all around that kind of Eastern Europe, and you know, amazing for beers and stuff. Mm. And the Mourne Mist the other night, the boys, they've also, of course, did loads of research. And as a Pilsner, I mean, it could stand up there with anyone that I've ever tasted. I was really like impressed, and again went so nicely with some of those dishes. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought, you know, you'd have a Pilsner, because you think, oh, I'll go for a few beers, but you never really associated with such beautiful fine dining and the complimentary. So you chose that, obviously, did you?
Yeah, it's funny, it went so nice after doing the tasting menu whenever I get home at night. That's the beer. I had a wee beer when I get home.
Yeah,
it was absolutely beautiful just to sit down and collect my thoughts over the night and how it went. Yeah, for me, there's no point serving just local food and then serving wine.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of you, as I say, from here. So we only serve local drinks as well. It's a celebration of place and produce. So I can't bring in anything from anywhere else. You know, that's what really is.
In terms of the future, then, I mean, you were saying there about plans. And I mean, is the sky the limit for you now? Or are you constantly thinking of places like hanging out of trees?
Yeah. So I've got 4 more locations nailed down. I'm going to release dates in May, but I'll release tickets in May, but the dates will be for August onwards, because I'm getting ready to open another business in May. So it's going to be a sustainable hot food bar.
Wow.
As far as I'm aware, it's the first one in the UK where zero waste will be the main ethos. And again, everything will come in 15 miles and all organic, locally sourced produce.
Wow, that's really interesting. And where, I mean, again, the idea for that, where did you get this idea? Because sustainable, of course, is a very much of a buzzword at the moment, and even in travel and in food. Very interesting.
Yeah, so I have 3 young daughters, and I see it as if we're lending this planet off them. So I want to leave them something to go to, you know what I mean? And if we all don't wise up, there's not going to be anything. You know, there's no fish for them by the time they're my age if we keep going the way we're going, you know?
Yeah, that is, I mean, again, when you watch David Attenborough and you watch some of the programmes, I mean, you would tend to be quite despondent, wouldn't you? Because you think to yourself, oh, but you can't, you're right, we can't be like that. We have to keep hope going, you know, and especially in the world at the moment, I suppose, the way things are, you know, you'd be wondering, it's kind of all a bit crazy. We caught COVID over Ukraine now, but you know, it was lovely actually to escape to Killeavy Castle, and to be, when you go up around the Mourne's area there in the hiking, you do tend to forget about the world. It's a magic place.
Yeah, like I was at Spelgadam yesterday, beautiful place, and like 1 minute was sun, the next minute was snowing out of the heavens, but then the snow cleared, you know, yeah, and it was sunny again. So you're getting the best of both worlds there, really, you know.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely beautiful. Like, it's a privilege to call this place home, you know.
Absolutely. And there's the idea of the bar that you were saying, so how will that work? Would that be a mobile, will it be like a set location?
Oh, set location.
Yeah,
so in Dundrum, because I'll be growing my veg and all out the back. So essentially, it's the first chip ever to bring in whole animals and grow their own veg, and trying to support the producers as well. So take Castle Screen, for instance. If they've load beef shins, can't sell, well, don't be mincing them, putting them in the burgers. I'll take them and turn them into a pie, you know.
Wow, yeah.
That's the idea.
Brilliant, so that sounds great.
Everyone's supporting each other all the time.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, your own food, right? When you do you, I mean, you have a guilty pleasure. Do you have a little tuna sandwich at home, sneaking? What is Paul Cunningham's like go-to guilty pleasure?
I could live in cheese and bread for the rest of my life.
Yeah,
cheese and bread is my thing. Like this morning, at sourdough bread with Mullins cheese. You ever tried Mullins cheese? Amazing cheese.
Yeah, there was you was mentioned Ballylickey. I think was there Ballylisk?
Ballylisk. Yeah, it's quite good too.
There was a rose cheese that I had called Rose. It was at the Balmoral Festival when I was up here a few months ago, and that was quite good. I thought that was really, really interesting. Another local area somewhere. Yeah,
it's a very good cheese. So it's single herd, triple root. It's really good. And there's a smoked one as well, you know. But probably the best cheese from up around this area probably Youngbuck, but that's a blue cheese. But I just, the stronger the better for me. So that's why I say that one. It's, I've known him very, very for a long time. I think I was the first chef in the country to go and make cheese one.
I
would use his whey for a lot of things.
Brilliant.
So for brining or reducing his whey right down to make the whey dull slushy.
Yeah, it was a great taste tour I did here recently with Caroline and around Belfast and Mike's Cheeses, and he had a lot of those ones that you mentioned there, all in one place that you could actually buy in the but phenomenal stuff. I mean, I was like, you know, because Sheridan's would be a big place down in Dublin, a very popular cheese place, but that was absolutely on a par. I mean, fantastic. When you outside of when you're allowed to go outside of County Down, right, in the morns, where do you like, I mean, travel-wise, you mentioned Nordic and Scandinavia. Where are your places you love to go or travel?
My favourite place is Galway. I love Galway. I don't know why. I love it. I've been there so many times. And you got JP McMahon down there as well. And Enda McAvoy, two amazing restaurants. Like, I took wee Farrah when she was 6 months old. And she sat in my lap and I tasted everything I tasted. For me, the sunshine, I'm not really fond of sunshine because I'm ginger and I turn into a big freckle, you know. But
You look very healthy.
I've been to Copenhagen.
It's all the seaweed.
I quite like the vibes in Copenhagen. It was really nice there.
Good Copenhagen. I love it there as well. And I did a whole thing there where you go and you live like a Viking down the south of the country a bit. But amazing. They've been voted, of course, the happiest place in the world, and they cycle everywhere. I mean, they seem to have more bicycles than Beijing, and. It is a very inspirational place, isn't it? Again, they've a very strong culture there as well for sustainability and foraging and the craft beers, and there's a big movement going on. It seems to have been the number one place. I mean, I suppose Noma, everyone kind of heard of that, but it's very out there though, isn't it?
But it's very good. Like, even if you go to the shop, like stuff that isn't healthy for you is really, really dear, or something that's healthy for you is quite cheap. And I quite like that. It's not forcing you to be healthy, but it's just like, well, it's up to you.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because like Norway has this massive sugar tax and alcohol tax, and they just drive into Sweden and they buy all it over there. But it's still a bit of a hassle, I suppose, to have to do that, isn't it?
It's just Locklinger everywhere, you know. It's a nice place to be.
When you're creating the menus now going forward, do you ever get people asking you, you know, or are they afraid to say to you, Paul, can you do this or can you do that? Is there a kind of a consultancy process you'll do for private stuff?
No, I don't mind at all. It's very important to me that everyone leaves happy. So I'm not going to put someone that far out of the comfort zone that they feel awkward sitting at the table. You know, like the first three courses were eating with your hands. And the idea was to break down barriers. Because it makes everyone feel a bit more comfortable. Actually, didn't you see him just spill that over his fingers? That's a bit of crack going now, you know. And it just lightens the whole tone. So I always put out an email asking for dietary requirements or anything they're not too sure about. And if they come back to me, then I could just adjust their one dish to suit them. You know?
No, that's really interesting. And I think for people that, as I said, who would enjoy this, when they do try this secret dining experience, they're going to really be blown away by it. And the one thing that I think is phenomenal about it as well is the nice way that you meet people, you know, and you kind of get to interact with people who've created the food. For me, that was lovely. You know, I was chatting to the guys who made the beer. They were on our table and they told me the process. There's something lovely, Paul, isn't there, about that? Not just going into a restaurant, sitting down and just getting the food, and you're hoping, you know, the waiter will say, have you any questions about the menu? And you're like, well, you know, but you know, it's obviously a whole different, it's a commercial situation. It's so nice, isn't it, that you gave all detailed explanations on all the actual ingredients, how you cooked it. Just to give, in a nutshell, there was one that you did, I'm not sure, and there was a lot of marinating and there was 12 hours involved in loads of them. But just to give people an idea, maybe one or two of dishes from the from the other night but that you picked.
So there's a great dish I do, and it's all based on the rain in Ireland, which everyone cries about the rain. They really cry about the rain. Not so much me, because I think it makes our food better, because all them nutrients are getting into the soil. So I do a little dish where, from the bottom up, I've got a cheese mousse, and then I make a soil. I make my own pumpernickel bread, and then mix that with fermented mushroom powder and crispy onions. I make a soil, make an earth. I also take pink for apple potatoes, which are amazing. The nuttiness are amazing. I bake them in hay, and then roll them in toasted hay oil, and then roll that in baked onion powder. I take little small onion skins, and I sous vide them in onion bouillon for 6 hours. But I want to hold the structure of the onion, but I want to increase the sweetness. So that's why I do it nice and slow like that. And then I fill that with a heather smoked onion puree. And then I have so essentially that whole dish.
Now this was really fun as well. Potato, cheese and onion. Yeah. You know, so you thought it was like a bag of potatoes in a bowl, but of course it was completely. I mean, it was fine dining. Potato, cheese and onion. It was amazing.
Yeah. So I add a couple of wee forest herbs, so it looks like a wee potato field, and then essentially that whole dish would be too rich to eat by itself. But then I add an onion bouillon, so I make an onion stock, which takes 12 hours, and then I reduce that right down by 8 tenths to make like an onion caramel, sort of. And that sweetness just brings the whole dish to life, like our rain brings our food to life.
That was amazing, because I actually had started the dish before they came with the sauce, and I did love the richness as well. But then, of course, it was another completely different dish. Yeah, but it was wonderful. Yeah, gorgeous the way it was presented.
It's a beautiful dish.
So, Paul, what do you think now going forward for the food? Do you think a lot of other people are, you know, is there a lot of changes coming? I mean, do you think COVID has shaken up the hospitality, I mean, restaurant business in a way that it may never be the same again?
Yeah, it's definitely shaken up the way chefs are going to work. I can see that coming. It was coming even before COVID, where chefs are going to do a 4-day week, you know. I can see a lot of chefs coming out of the kitchens now and trying to do things like I do, because they're probably seeing how good mine was. I want a wee bit of that there. Like, you know, the best compliment you'll ever get is to be copied, you know.
Yeah.
The future of food, I don't want restaurants to die out. I really don't, because I think there's something nice about being able to go out for your anniversary or just nip in for a wee meal. So I don't want that to happen. We do need to get more chefs, and we need to get more front of house. So there needs to be a push on that. Whether we go to schools and we start doing talks or whatever, you know, you ask any young kid nowadays what they're doing, it's computers or something like that.
Yeah, do you think know? It would be great. I mean, Cathal Brua Street was an institution, I suppose, in Dublin, is still. Do you think we need more of that? I mean, like, you know, where, you know, you can go straight from school into serious good food training. I know Switzerland, for example, is way up there for places. Mm-hmm. Do you think we need more of that here?
Yeah, well, I think in a way there needs to be less of school, maybe. Like, whenever I went 1 day a week, and then I trained in kitchens the rest, and my skill elevated. Like, I know boys who went 5 days a week to tech, and I was leaps and bounds ahead of them. Like, so there has to be some sort of more balance or whatever way that works. And like, asking a kid to work 5 days in a restaurant and then go 2 days to tech, that doesn't work. So the restaurants need to come in hand to hand as well and say, right, well, you work 3 days here and then go 2 days to tech. That kid needs 2 days off a week, full stop. You know, full stop. He's not going to gain the knowledge if he's tired all the time.
Yeah, yeah. You know? For somebody that would like, for yourself, you mentioned sourdough there, you mentioned all the lovely stuff that you were cooking. Could you give us a simple recipe? Or is this mightn't be the best question you want to get asked, but is there anything you could say to people, you know, that could just really improve your cooking, or a recipe or something that you could try out that people would try and they can be very proud of themselves? Yeah.
Well, a real simple one that's very, very versatile as well, wild garlic pesto. It's quite simple. So I pick wild garlic. It's quite easy to find, and it's probably give you the wee foraging bug when you pick it. So I'll pick my wild garlic and I'll wash it in salt water, just make sure it's nice and clean. And then I'll blanch that for a minute. So salted water, boil it for 1 minute, and straight into ice water. And then drain it and blitz it with roast hazelnuts, parmesan, salt, and rapeseed oil.
Wow, it's very
easy.
Healthy.
It's easy. Yeah. Like. And then you can add that to your risotto, you can add that to your sandwich, you know, a wee bit of cream and a spoonful of that, there's quick sauce. There's so much can be done to it, you know.
Brilliant. Are you planning to write any books, or what do you think about all?
I don't know.
Is that sustainable?
There has been a book in the talk. Yeah. To be honest, there has.
But yeah. Well, I think it would be a big sellout. Yeah. I think it would be
sellout. You know, how proud would it be for your kids to sit and read your work?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? No. Absolutely.
And I think put that stamp on this local area.
Oh yeah, I'd say you've a good few books in your pocket. No doubt about that. Absolutely.
It's been mentioned a couple of times.
Great. Well, we'll watch this space then. Mm-hmm. Paul, just for anybody who wants to get more information on all the wonderful things you've talked about tonight, and you've beguiled us with your recipes and your wonderful philosophy, and I love the way you think, where do they go? In terms of people to get information, or where would they find you?
You can get me on Instagram is the best, so it's More and Larder on Instagram.
Okay, so that'd be at More and Larder. And then for the area around here, Paul, Savour the Mourne, it's hashtag Savour Visit Mourne, I think is the one that I can give out to people there.
So that's our new brand alignment, Savour Visit Mourne, and that'll bring in everyone.
Wonderful.
If you want to know what's going on in the Mournes, hashtag and you'll see plenty.
Absolutely. You know? And for anybody who wants to be up and down, this is the place to come.
Yeah, exactly.
And Paul, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you this evening. What have you picked for us for your final piece of music?
Yeah, so the final piece of music I picked was Desi McGee, and the song's called Forage. Again, another guy I went to school with and just local. Thanks a million for having me today. I really enjoyed it.
Well, now the Connell.